I'm good, sir. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good. It's an absolute pleasure to be able to talk to you today. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
I got to wonder, after so long, this kind of activity has to just really bore the hell out of you.
Nope.
Really? Okay. Okay.
No, I can't shut up, and if somebody gives me a chance to talk for half an hour about things I love, I'm happy to pontificate.
Yeah, well, that's great. That's great. I got it. I want to know. I mean, because we did this in Central Time, are you still located? Are you still around the Chicago region?
Yeah, I'm still in Cook County.
Oh, well, very good. Very good. Yeah, I live in Bourbon A. That's good.
Okay, you're in Kane County? What is that?
Yeah, Kankakee County.
Kankakee.
Yeah. Down here, Kankakee County. Down here where nobody cares and farmers take over.
Farm country road, so
yeah. Well,
generally really good people, so
yeah, great people. I have, like a lot of people, James, I've followed sticks for, oh my God, since the 70s. For me, it was the late 70s, because when you guys came out, I was, I don't know, maybe seven. So you guys have been around a long time. I kind of wonder. Well, one thing that's really neat, really cool, is the fact that you're still making original music. Because a lot of bands, after so long, they get to the place to where all they're really doing is just playing the hits, which is cool, which people like. But and is there a reason why? I mean, you guys must just love making music rather than just playing, the things that have made you so successful.
Well, Tommy Shaw loves to write, and he's not he's sort of a quiet southerner, and you have to kind of draw him out actually to get him into conversation. So I think he's more comfortable with his guitar and coming up with new creative ideas. And now his main collaborator, Will, whatever his last name is, with us now, is I can't come up with it, but Will Vagevich. And those guys got to like each other way back when Tommy was with Damn Yankees and was hanging out in the San Francisco Bay Area with Jack Blades, and he and Tommy and Will bonded, and Tommy's kind of moved Will into his neck of the woods down in Tennessee now, and those guys love writing together. And Lawrence Gowan is just he's a very creative man on many levels, and he's a strong writer. And I don't know, I'm the lazy guitarist, so.
Well, I tell you what, for being lazy, you've done pretty well.
Well, every now and then I'll do something that's really pretty good, and whenever we're arranging a new song, I'll definitely get my 2 cents in there, because I'm highly opinionated in that regard. But I mean, to sit down and write, by myself, which, I mean, Tommy's, that's more Tommy's nature than mine. And back in the day, I mean, we were all battling to get stuff on the records, and being Dennis, myself, and Tommy. And so but I don't feel the challenge anymore, because we've got enough hit songs and great rock tracks and sort of classic rock radio type tracks that I don't feel like highly motivated to sit down and write.
So now, when you guys are, when they're writing the songs and that, do you, I know you just said you put your 2 cents in that, but are you writing your own parts for that, for the songs?
Well, particularly now when there's three guitar players, I just, I listen to what the two of them are doing, and then I find something that either reinforces, just the basic part of the song. But I mean, my thing is, and Will came in, and when Will came in, he said, says, "Jay, why nobody plays guitar solos like you do? So you play the solo here, and Tommy play the solo there, and or vice versa, or something like that." Or, Tommy's going to play the solo on this one, and on Jay, well, you're take off and do your thing on this one. So I saw Hendrix play five times. I'm profoundly influenced by that man.
Wow.
And when he was alive. And, Yeah.
Wow. And, you know, Buddy Miles was the first person I ever played with and toured with. Huh. Yeah. So, I mean, I never got to see Hendrix. I mean, it was definitely before my time, but definitely, you know, huge influence to so many people in that. So I wonder, though, you know, one of the things that I think about when you think about classic rock, let's just put it this way, when you think about classic rock and you go back and you think about Styx and, you know, and Journey and REO and all these bands, one thing that was in Kansas, okay. One thing that I can say that you guys did that a lot of people, I don't know if it just went by the wayside net, but you guys, when you did your solos, when you were structuring your guitar parts in that, it seemed like you were playing for the song. It was like an extension of the song other than, okay, here's the song. All right, now there's a solo. Now we're back to the song.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing that's very intentional.
Well, you know, you've clearly spent a lot of time thinking about this. You know, I don't know. Sometimes it's just kind of gut level, and maybe I've been listening to Eric Clapton a little bit more, because really that's how I really learned how to play lead guitar, is I took Eric Clapton's Crossroads solo from the Live record that he did in Cream going way back when, and I slowed it down to half speed, which you could do on a vinyl LP record player if you had the, like, there's on some old things they would make spoken word records that only went at half of 33 and a third, was like 16 and two thirds, I guess, RPMs per minute. But you slow something down to half speed, it's the same note an octave down, only the notes are going by at half speed. So then I would learn to sing the part, and then I'd done from memorizing how he, you know, the notes that I was singing, the notes that he was playing, and then I'd see how, well, he had to finger it this way. And so that's really how I trained myself in playing lead guitar, was, you know, listening Clapton's best, and slowing it down to half speed, and then working it up so I could play it at full speed.
Yeah. Well, you know, you definitely, you know, learn from one of the best, because, you know, I think when I think about guitar players, I think the people that really choose their musical words carefully, you know, and don't say too much, you know, don't go overboard. Those are the people that I tend to gravitate towards. It's one of the reasons, uh-huh, you know, Styx's music has always been foundational for me, because I feel that. I feel like you're only saying what you need to say at that moment, and you're not trying to, you know, go overboard or impress somebody or, you know, anything like that.
Well, I'm not going to impress somebody.
Well, you probably have over.
You're going to get on the stage, that's for sure.
Right.
And I'm sort of, yeah, I mean, my family, we're all started on piano at age five. And my aunt was a church organist. My dad was a great pianist, but he could hear the thing, and then he could play it by ear from what he heard. And I have that same gift where I can hear something, you know, and so I pretty much knock it out the first or second time. And I might not be perfect with it. When I hear recording, you have to be perfect. Or pretty darn close to perfect anyway. Well, these days with Pro Tools, you can make up for a lot of errors, but in any event.
Yeah. Well, errors are, you know, when somebody makes a mistake, most people don't notice it anyway. You know, it's just the, you know, the crazy musicians in the audience or that are listening that are, you know, critiquing everything that you're doing. But, you know, sometimes those missed notes, you know, go on to, you know, be historical, and sometimes.
Somehow be a little more charming than what you were thinking of playing. So,
yeah.
You know, the other thing that happens is, you know, you play something and you say, I'm going to go back and replay that solo. We've worked on a song for weeks and maybe even months. We've gone back and forth between other songs. We're going to come back to this one. And there was one time I would completely replay a solo. I was going to erase it. And they go, no, that's a solo. I love that solo. You got to keep that there. So,
yeah.
And that's a good feeling. If somebody really, really grabs one of my colleagues, then okay.
Yeah. So in the early days, I'm kind of curious, you know, in the days where you're developing your playing and your technique and your style and who you are or who you're going to become as a guitar player, what are some of the things that you did at that point in time that you feel made you into the guitar player that you are right now?
Well, I mean, everyone in my family was starting on piano at age 5. And three of the five of us continued on with piano after that. I was one of them. And we were all encouraged to play in the high school band. My brother picked up the trombone. I picked up my sister's clarinet. And my other brother became a drummer, Eric, who was in a band, but he wanted to be an actor. So he went to had a degree in theater from University of Illinois. And he's been in a couple of movies. He sent me this photo. He's got a scene with Robert De Niro in a movie from about 20 years ago. So, but, you know, so there's showbiz in the family blood to a point. And I've gotten off topic for what the question really was.
That's okay. No, I was just kind of curious of just your guitar playing. What things you think that you did when you were developing yourself, you know, as a guitar player that have made you the player that you are right now?
You have to pay attention to what other players are doing, and you have to go watch them play. A lot of times, I can't figure out how he did that. Well, then you can see him do something similar, and you go, oh, that's part of his style. And you know, the biggest thing was, as I said, slowing guitar solos off records. They were 33 and a third RPM, and it was an old spoken word records that if you put it at half that speed, that's the same note an octave down. Mm-hmm. So then you can learn the stuff at half speed, and then you can work it up to full speed because you know what the notes are. You just have to 100 times and you may get it. And that's right. What I've done it 1,000 times or 10,000 times and I got it.
Right.
But you have to be sort of obsessive compulsive. But, you know, I was obsessed. I was playing my guitar 8 hours a day.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I feel that at some point in time, you know, most of the legendary or great guitar players have, you know, devoted themselves like that. Would you say that, you know, since you have played other instruments and you come from a musical family and all that, would you say that you're passionate, that you really love playing the guitar, that it's, you know, okay. Well, you know, I've actually, in all my years of doing this, I've actually ran across people that are really well-known musicians, known for their guitar, but don't feel that way about it. They view it as, you know, kind of a tool in order to do a job. And I personally don't get that, you know, train of thought, but because I'm obsessed too, but, you know, I always like to find out because, you know, you can tell a lot about a person, you know, when, you know, if you're a guitar player in a band, you know, you must really love, you know, the guitar in order to do it.
Well, I mean, with, you know, with the three guitars set up in sticks now, the new guy Will, he when he walked in the door, he goes, "JY, nobody plays like you.
Yeah.
You're very unique. Nobody plays like you." And that's something from someone who's got quite a skill set. From someone like that to say that to me, I said, "Well, I'm just ripping off Henry." But what people hear, you know, they hear me. I'm doing it differently than probably either one of those would have done it at the time. But I've if you're gonna steal from the best. You can quote me on that.
Okay. I'm getting a lot of really good quotes here. Yeah, well, right. One thing I can say, though, you know, about Styx's music, I mean, listening to, you know, the last couple albums, is that if you were to go back, you know, to the early days, the songs that you guys are putting out now, the music that you're still doing today, is still Styx. You know how some bands over time, they'll morph, they'll change, you know, they'll add stuff or do something a little bit different, but their stuff, you know, almost every song to me, you know, if I was to close, you know, it's iconic. It's a sound that everybody knows. This is Styx. It's not, you know, it's not like, for instance, some people when Rush went to keyboards, right? When they got a little bit more techno and stuff like that, they lost some people because, you know, it wasn't what they were accustomed to. But when I listened to your last album, for instance, it sounds like Styx.
Well, I mean, we've always had keyboard and in the band. And Dennis, the time he was in the band, I mean, he was very much a leader in, you know, of because he and the Panazzo brothers, they'd worked together for years. And before I joined with them, and then Tommy came along a little bit of time after that, after John Scalusi left. And so there's always been two guitar players. And Scalusi was a great acoustic player. And he was very much more of a Peter Gabriel fan, maybe, than he was a very different guitarist than I am, but excellent guitarist. And much better 12 string player than me. Because I've always been power chords and single string leads, they would accuse me of that all, but it works for me.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the secret sauce in classic rock, is it's like power chords and in single string. Yeah.
Well, I mean, Pete Townsend and Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah.
So I take the best of both of them, and that's what I tried to be.
Yeah. Well, you.
And I saw the Who time in person. I saw him break a couple of really good guitars. So.
Can I quote you on that too?
Keith Moon, you know, we all there to party with him, and I never quite got to.
Well, man, you've had an amazing career, you know, that's for sure. And that, so let me ask you, when it comes to your guitars and your equipment and that, are you would you categorize yourself as somebody that's really techie, like a gearhead, somebody that just loves to play with amps and, you know, and pedals and, you know, rack systems and all that kind of stuff, or are you more simplistic?
In the beginning, I sort of had, in order to get the Hendrix sound, I had a, generally, I don't give a damn, but when it came around, because I wanted to sound like Hendrix, play like Hendrix, there was a guy I went to college with, Dave Yoshinari, who I think is no longer on the face of the earth, but I said, he himself was quite a pretty good musician, could play keyboards and guitar. I went to IIT, Illinois Institute of Technology. I've got an aerospace engineering degree, and he was in the he was an electrical engineer. But he said, "Well, I can make it." He made this little distortion box for somebody. I was like, "Damn, I'd like one to get one of those." And so I just went up there, and I wanted. It's really hard to get the opening on Foxy Lady is an F sharp on the G string, which is like the. So you're at the 11th fret, which is not a natural harmonic thing. And so I just, he just kept putting different resistors and different transistors into this little metal box. And then the next thing you know, we had the thing, whenever we started referring to it as the generator, because it was my distortion box. It was, you know, it was built by one of my fellow students. But it allowed me, I was the only one that could really do the Foxy Lady thing for a number of years until everything got advanced, and then you got the Saniacs and this and the other thing. So evolved from the working in the garage days, but you know, there's a lot of people that helped me along the highway to make my dreams come true.
Yeah. So, I mean, okay, you've been around such a long time now, you know, one of the most, you know, Styx really is an iconic band. I mean, everybody knows who you are. I was just, you know, interviewing a guitar player in the Philippines, and he was going on and on about how much he loves Styx. And I told him I was talking to you, and he was excited about that, you know. So I told him I'd give him a sneak preview before I aired this. I will, and he'll love that. So so what's the secret to the sauce, so you know, for being able to go on so long and continue to just, you know, put out great music and put on good shows? I mean, because a lot of bands don't come close to making it, you know, as long as you guys have.
And you know, there's internal battles over, you know, wait a minute. I wanted to date that girl. You're going to date that girl. You know, little personal things can get in the way of the music. And,
yeah,
I think what partly kept us together, we were all sort of glued to, we got married pretty young, in the early 20s. And, Dennis DeYoung was married early. John Panazzo got married, but he got divorced. And he got married and divorced again. And Chuck is the, you know, he's the only one that hasn't been married. And Berluski was married to a beautiful girl. And Tommy comes along, and he's had a number of beautiful wives. And Ricky Phillips is Ricky Phillips and Styx. People don't really know this because he didn't really like to say it, but his stepsister, he grew up in Iowa and moved to the West Coast because his parents moved out there. His parents got divorced, but his dad married someone from, you know, remarried to someone else. And so Ricky became like a second cousin to Spielberg's main producer throughout his whole thing, is Kathleen Kennedy. And so Ricky's been seen the film industry from the very inside, and had a chance to hang around and meet all kinds of, you know, big time Hollywood people, which is something I'm envious of. But Ricky's just, he's a killer bass player, and I love the 5-string bass, because when you hit that low B string with a proper amplification in a big room, it's like,
yeah,
it resonates every vessel in your body.
Yeah,
that's the great thing about it, is rock and roll is a visceral thing, if I may use that word. And and I like, because our band is very visceral, and Todd, John Panazzo, God rest his soul, he was great. But Todd might be the best drummer on the planet.
Yeah.
And in drum magazines, so I'm working with now the cream of the crop, I think, of who's out there pretty much. And Lawrence is an astounding keyboard player. Dennis was great, but Lawrence can play circles around him. And Ricky Phillips, Chuck still comes out and does some shows, but Ricky's killer bass player and a halfway decent singer. So we get the harmony parts covered between Todd and Ricky and Lawrence, and then you get Tommy and myself and Will, who's come in to be support system for the whole thing. We got home run hitters at every position.
Yeah. And
so there's no reason to. The magic is you have home run hitters. That's the real magic of this whole thing. And Tommy's a great writer, but he doesn't really like to talk that much about things. And I'm full of Barney, so a little Irish in me and a little Scottish in me. So I love to talk about the band, because, you know, there's people hear the finished product, but everything that goes into it is, I mean, I'm told I should write a book, but I don't know if I want to. But I'm telling it to you so you can write the book.
okay. Uh-oh, I might run with that.
we've got a great thing going now, and I trust it's going to go on for a few more years anyway.
Yeah.
I'm 73, but I'm healthier than people younger than me.
Yeah.
My wife, I just lost after 50 years of marriage. She passed away last November. But she had all kinds of weird things going on in her genetics. And I was right at her side to learn. So I learned an awful lot about medicine. And which taught me a lot about what I should be, how I should be supplementing my diet and what not to eat. I'll go to McDonald's, but I'm going to take a load of vitamin D3. I'm going to take zinc. The zinc kills virus. And I've got all kinds of, I really want to become a doctor, but I think I know a lot of times doctors only know what they learned and then they don't necessarily keep up. So there's a lot of new things out there that they are surprised to hear about sometimes. But I'm trying to stay on top of what can help me be my best.
Yeah. Yeah. Being healthy, you know, on the road, you know, and, because you know what you do, it requires, you know, a lot of time and a lot of energy and a lot of effort. And I think people don't realize that aspect of what bands have to go through in order to be able to, you know, perform at, you know, at the level like you guys do and like you do in that. So you got to take care of yourself for sure. Got a question for you, a little bit off topic, and I hope you don't mind if I ask, but it's been a question of debate amongst my circle. And that is, once a band no longer has original members in it, is it still, but the band still goes on. I mean, people still, you know, are still, you know, filling those shoes. Is that now still the same band? Would it be a tribute band or would it be a legacy band? Or does it even really matter?
Well, we've lost a lot of important parts of this band and found replacement parts that are, they're equal or better. And, Dennis was a unique writer. And Come Sailor is a great song, and that song, things I claim a little credit for, which I never get credit for, but Dennis wrote Come Sailor. It was really about, you know, escaping stress and the conflicts in your personal life, that kind of a thing. But it was right around the time, that was late 70s, 77, and then you got Star Wars coming out right in the 70s, and you got Close Encounters of the Third Kind and all kinds of outer space stuff going on. And I was an aerospace engineer, and of course I was a space geek. And I just said, what if at the very end of the song, the lyric goes, you know, that the sailing ship turns into a starship? Now, Dennis wrote the lyric line that created that thing, but it was my idea, lyrical idea, that he basically, you know, he hit a home run with it. And but there were angels, but to my surprise, I knew where the starship headed for the skies. I think that helped push that song even further along.
Right.
Great song to start with. And Tommy was a renegade, which is another thing that's been adapted in so many places.
Yeah.
And I think for dealers, you use it all the time because they put it on the thing once and they came back to win, you know, they're back against the wall and they came back to win. So they play that at Heinz Field in Pittsburgh all the time when the Steelers got the ball and even the TV announcer went, playing Renegade.
Yeah.
And, so we've become part of popular culture in this regard. But Tommy, it was, he was kind of doing Alan Parsons kind of dirgy thing. And it was kind of brooding and dark, you know. And I said, Tommy, we need a really killer rock song to go on this next record with Pieces of Eight.
Mm-hmm.
And Tommy was living in, we were all on the south side of Chicago, which is where we rehearsed, and Tommy would drive in from southwestern Michigan which was maybe an hour and a half drive. So he had to go 90 minutes each way to get back to his house. But I said, well, go home tonight. Give me 24 hours. I'm going to put some guitar parts on here and then see what you think. And I made Renegade into what it is. But I mean, he laid the foundation. Mm-hmm. And he sings as fun as he always does. And the six harmonies, but you know, it's just, but you know, I even put a guitar solo on there and he said, I'm going to touch this. This is great. That's the song. So I'm uncredited in those ways. And I don't, you know, the world doesn't need to know. The internet put that in their article, but, you know, so I've contributed, I think, vitally to the success of our two biggest songs.
Yeah. Well, you did.
It's easier to just...
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to say, didn't you write Snowblind?
Snowblind, yeah, but I had help on that too.
Yeah, that's my favorite song.
I mean, the lyric, I mean, to Tommy, some of the band members of Six have had more experience with cocaine than I have by a long time. you know, it was kind of, the cocaine was a big thing there, so I just thought Snowblind would be a good title to do it, and I was trained on piano to start with, so they did it in, you know, the keyboard thing and started up to me, and I'm credited, I don't think I get the full credit for that song, I shouldn't get it, because then Tommy came along with Harmless and Innocent, You Devil in White, You Stole My Little Will Without a Fight, that,
yeah,
what a lyric line for that song.
Yeah, yeah.
And I can't remember how that's credited. I don't think it's just credited to me. I think it's me and Tommy and Dennis maybe on that one. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a great song.
Me and Tommy maybe.
Well, you guys have written a lot of hits. Now you're getting ready to start playing again in May, correct?
We've got shows that haven't gone on our schedule. A lot of them haven't gone on sale yet, but we're already booked, and you know, until early next year.
Yeah.
And
and you're even doing a handful of shows or some shows with REO Speedwagon, correct?
You guys... we were successful a couple of years ago with them, the year after the pandemic when we toured with them.
Yeah.
And Loverboy. I mean, we set some t-shirt selling records that, I mean, people were so starved from the pandemic, not having any music, you know, not being able to do so many things that people love to do.
Yeah.
But they came out in droves.
Yeah.
2022. And, so, you know, it's just, I don't know. I've been blessed. I'm Clint Eastwood lucky, I like to say, because have you ever seen the movie The Unforgiven that Clint Eastwood was in?
Oh, yeah.
He's, you know, so he's portraying this guy who is really mean-spirited, you know, shoot-to-kill kind of guy. William Money, well, I think that was his character in there. And then in the very end, you know, he's kind of old and dragging. And then they've got, but he's, Morgan Freeman is the sidekick. And then Gene Hackman and this other group of locals, you know, they get Morgan Freeman and they torture him and that kind of thing. And Eastwood comes in and says, I want to know who did this to my partner. And nobody spoke up. And all of a sudden, everyone starts shooting. And Eastwood's still standing there. Everybody else is dead. And then there was off to the side, the only survivor is this nerdy little guy. Looks like a writer from New York. And he goes, well, obviously, you knew exactly what order you were going to kill him in. And Eastwood goes, no, I was lucky.
Yeah.
I've always been lucky. And that's really how I feel about my music career, is that, you know, bumping into Dennis DeYoung and Tommy Shaw and Todd Zuckerman, Ricky Phillips.
Yeah.
You know, Glenn Burdick, even. I love that guy. He's his own wacky guy, but, he, you know, there's some cool stuff that he brought to the band when he was in. And he's kind of, I think he's part of Little Stevens thing. You know, from Springsteen. Yeah, he plays with him all the time now.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've been, Six has been blessed, and I've been blessed through this whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, Dennis went away, and Tommy was gone for a while, came back. Chuck's been around, but he's been not well part of the time, so he hasn't been there the whole time. And whenever we'd lose somebody, we'd get somebody that was their equal or greater.
Yeah.
And so, like Clint Eastwood said, I was lucky. But I've always been lucky.
Well, you guys have provided this. You guys have provided the soundtrack for a lot of people's lives, you know, throughout, you know, like me, the early days of me, you know, falling in love with music and guitar, you know, bands like Styx, you know, were the soundtrack of my life for, you know, for so long. And that, and, you know, I want to say thank you for that, because if it wasn't for people like you and others, you know, I can only imagine what music would have been like in that. But yeah, I know that, you know, that you probably have a lot of other things to do, James, and I want to thank you so much for your time. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. And once again, you know, I'm really grateful that I got this opportunity to chat with you.
Can I ask one question?
You sure can.
Yeah. What's your opinion on the band Kansas?
You know, it's funny. I think Kansas is an incredible band. I think they're a great band, but they're not my kind of band. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what it is. I mean, I've loved, once again, they're part of the soundtrack of my early days as well, but they're not a band that I've followed and really. I've seen you guys in concert, I don't know, maybe a dozen times, and I don't think I've ever seen Kansas.
Well, they were a great live band. We did a lot of work with them, and very fond of Perry Livgren.
Yeah.
Good guy. And he's a humble guy, but a great player.
Yeah.
And their whole sound with the vocals, you know, I mean, we had a lot in common with that band.
Yeah.
And they're a little more spiritual than we were, I would say. And, well, Carrie's, I guess, a devout Christian. So, and I think a couple of the other guys were as well in that band.
Yeah. I have a friend who's really close to some of the members of Kansas in that. Yeah. And you know, he's always going on, and I'm not taking anything. I think they really are a great band in that, but you know, I don't know. I listen to you guys and
that's
all. You know, it was you guys and Blue Oyster Cult, and you know, it was stuff. I hate to say Ted Nugent, and I I love Ted personally. I think, yeah, he's an amazing guy. He was just on my show not that long ago in that, but yeah, he's always a trip. I was fortunate enough in the 90s to open up for Ted a few times. You know, which I absolutely loved, you know, but, you know, it was guitar players. That's really what it was. I was centered in on guitar players, and, you know, you and Tommy really, you know, were a powerhouse, you know, just like I love Buck Dharma and I love Frank Marino and, those kinds of things, but they really are a great band. I mean, I don't know if they're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but they should be, you know, you should be, but
there's a lot of politics involved in that. Shit.
Yeah. I mean, is it even rock and roll anymore when it comes to that, you know, so.
No, it's basically Jan Wenner's. His child, and if he pushed for anybody that he personally liked.
Yeah.
And you know, and actually I know a guy that worked there for a while at Rolling Stone, and he just said, you know, Jan is he's a dictator. But Jan agreed to have lunch with me. So I hung out with him and for a little while, and
yeah,
and we were looking for the cover of Rolling Stone at the time, and he just ultimately finally said, I can't give you the cover, so that's fine.
Wow.
And, you know, I don't really care.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a magazine. He can do what he wants, and you know, it's not like him saying no to that is the end of my career. So
yeah,
we've kept on going, and I don't even have Rolling Stone is still published.
Yeah,
I haven't heard anything about
it. I don't know, but yeah, it is. And I've never bought a copy of Rolling Stone. And I got to tell you, when they put out that top 100 guitar player list, I hate that. Oh yeah. My God, do I hate that. You know, it's the worst. I mean, you know, when somebody like, no, you weren't on there, but they put, you know, like, you know, forgive me here. It's like Neil Young before Eddie Van Halen. I mean, come on. It's like, is this really a guitar player list? It's like,
no.
I know it's subjective though, but you know, but I don't think.
Human frailty and subjectiveness. But,
yeah.
The proof is in the pudding, and people that see this band in concert and buy the records and like them. We, as I said, the show we did with, you know, ourselves and REO and Loverboy the year after the pandemic, now that's 2 years ago, it just, you know, people, we had over 20,000 people a number of times.
Yeah.
In the building. Well, those are outdoor shows, actually. But just, you know, the people will speak in a different way, and Jan Wenner doesn't speak to the people, so.
Right. Exactly.
So,
all right, James.
And nobody loves everybody, and everybody, you know, dislikes somebody. and that depressing note.
Yeah.
I love what I've done for a living here, and I love the people I've met, and I've met some really great ones, and I met some people that are, you know, maybe not.
Right.
But I wouldn't change a thing.
Yeah. Well,
we learn from our mistakes and we learn from our success. So.
Yeah. Well, you're an interesting guy, James, and you've had an amazing career. And once again, thanks for all the great music you guys have done in that. I appreciate you taking your time to talk to me in that. And I wish you the best of luck on your shows that you got coming up and, you know, whatever's in the future for Styx in that. Maybe sometime, right. You know, I'll get a chance to come see you live and, you know, I don't know, maybe shake your hand. Well, all right.
See what we can do.
All right, James, you take care. Thank you so much. All right. Bye-bye. Okay.